Occupied Territory with Mike Fader here, and we're going to talk about a bill. I mentioned this once before, but we're going to talk to some guests today about a bill that it's working its way through the Georgia legislature. Just one more attempt by a state legislature in this country to suppress your right to freedom of assembly and to free speech. In this case, it affects, as many other legislatures' bills have, unions being able to picket, unions being able to survive at all, to organize and picket. And also, obviously, it affects any kind of assembly like Occupy, any Occupy group. And today we're going to talk about what's going on in Georgia. And I just want to mention that this show is on every Thursday at 1 p.m. live, 1 p.m. Eastern. And I invite you all to tell everybody about this show, because the Occupy movement, which has not been comatose, but in sort of a low level throughout the winter, is clearly waking up now all over the place. It's going to be 10 times, 100 times larger than it was before. And what's fascinating and what's really hopeful about it is that because the forces of repression, to use a certain phrase, not to sound so knee-jerk leftist, but truly what they are, because they are so blatant and so overwhelming and so dominant and trying to get away with so much more than they ever have before, they are provoking the response that you would expect in a hopefully free country. And the latest is this attack by the Republicans and state legislatures on women. And join with the Occupy movement, join with the fact that the president and the people that run the Congress and run the country have never investigated anybody on Wall Street, that the income inequality stays the way it does. This job recovery is still a lot of numbers. It hasn't affected a whole lot of people. So it's all happening. And the conventions are this year, as we have mentioned before. And, you know, we are looking for tremendous organization, demonstrations and protests this year, and occupations all over the place. And they're going to be joined by generic groups this time. People are finally seeing what they have in common. And this is going to be met by more militarization, more force, more arrests and more spying by the government. It's going to be quite a time, but it needs to be done. It needs to be done. I want to mention once again that we have a Facebook page here, and I urge everyone, as all part of the larger organism, to get involved in the Facebook page. It's called Occupied Territory, Occupied Territory. Just Google Occupied Territory and Facebook, and you come to our Facebook page. I post things regularly, things I think that are absolutely necessary to know, that are astounding to see, you know, and I urge everybody else to post things, videos, messages or responses, anything about the show that you hear that you want to get information on. If you want to get in touch with me personally, go to faderfiles.com, FederFiles.com, faderfiles, and you can contact me that way. So today we're going to discuss something that's going on down in Georgia. And let me just, right before we go to our guest, let me read you one or two paragraphs here, give you an idea what's happening down there. The growing trend of legislators in southern states that already have low union density and so-called right-to-work laws on the books proposing harsher anti-union laws has now spread to Georgia. In a move that could impact non-labor groups engaged in direct action, picketing, or protest, Georgia's Senate Bill 469 includes felony penalties for criminal trespass, and, unbelievably, conspiracy to commit criminal trespass. This goes back to the 1890s and around 1910, when just to meet somewhere to form a union, just to meet to discuss forming a union, was considered a major crime. The punishment will be, if you break this law, eventually if it becomes a law, being a $10,000 fine or a year in jail or possibly both. That this is specifically included in a bill that cracks down on organizations' right to picket outside a workplace or company seems to indicate that a union or other group engaged in picketing could be charged with a crime for the activity of one member who crosses the line. Or, for that matter, maybe if they meet somewhere near a factory or, you know, a place that is producing something, just to discuss it, you could be committing a crime. Anyhow, we have with us to discuss this Eric Robertson, who is the business manager of Teamsters Local 728 in Atlanta. Hiya.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay, so this bill, can you explain a little bit more about it? I mean, when did it start? Where does it come from? As if we didn't know, but maybe we should.
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm not the business manager. I'm a business agent, and I'm the political director of my local 728.
Okay, business agent and
political. I'm not the boss.
Okay, business agent and political director of Teamsters Local 728. And you're in Atlanta?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so go ahead. Tell me more about this bill.
Yeah, well, we found out about it a few weeks ago. It was actually introduced not at the beginning of the session. It was introduced kind of midway through the session, and it's being put forward by this man, Representative Senator Balfour, who is a vice president of Waffle House, and I'm not sure if you're familiar with the organization ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council.
We are, but you could explain it again. Yeah.
Well, him and every other sponsor of this bill are members of ALEC, which the American Legislative Exchange Council is a corporate-funded front group that essentially provides boilerplate language to attack unions, to attack civil rights organizations, to basically privatize public services and these kinds of things. And it's just a corporate-funded think tank, which is funded by, you know, just about any, you name a major corporation, they're funding ALEC. And they basically have these conferences, and most of the attacks across the country that you see going on, the legislation that's being put out there is directly taken from ALEC. In fact, some of these people don't even bother to take the ALEC logo off of their webpage.
Which it did, and this explains, of course, why a lot of these bills in different places sound exactly word for word the same.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
But in any case, last night, you know, we had actions and call-in days, and we had a union lobby day last week. We had several hundred union members go down and lobby their representatives against this bill. And the response of the Republican, the majority leadership, has been, you know, basically screw you. We're moving forward, and that's what they basically did last night.
Mm-hmm.
The bill came up yesterday was crossover day in the Georgia legislature, so any bill that did not pass from one house yesterday was going to be dead, and SB 469 was the last bill that was discussed, and they refused to allow debate, and
they really
rammed it through.
No debate,
not one bit of debate.
You mean, so wait a minute, so let me get this straight. It's not only that they didn't allow, let's say, witnesses in front of a hearing or something like that, but they didn't allow debate from other legislators?
That's correct. They did not. You could have discussion questions of the author of the bill, and you could discuss amendments, but you could not debate the actual bill itself. They cut off debate, called the question, took the vote, and rammed it through.
Well, I mean, it doesn't sound very much at all like America anymore, does it?
It was absolutely horrifying. I do want to make some points, though, that this bill is not... You know, you have the provisions in there that limit picketing, which fines the people who commit the act of picketing $1,000 a day, confines the organizations that they belong to, whether we know they're doing it or not, $10,000 a day. It makes the civil disobedience aspect has been changed a little bit, the part about trespass. It's conspiracy to commit trespass is no longer a felony, but it's a high aggravated misdemeanor.
Do they lay out in the bill what conspiracy to commit trespass is?
Well, absolutely not. So that's the problem. We actually had the Fulton County Sheriff, which Atlanta's part of Fulton County, weigh in saying he is opposed to the bill because it's going to basically turn the police into political police because you're going to have to interpret the intent of an action. You're going to have to interpret conspiracy. You're going to have to interpret, because there's a lot of the stuff here, it says, with the intent of. So these police officers are going to have to now start determining intent.
So if you
that's a slippery slope, you know?
If you wanted to do some kind of union activity or even organize a union outside of a plant somewhere, and you're, let's say, you meet at a restaurant maybe two blocks away from the plant, and there's a whole lot of people there, or you meet in some little hall somewhere or in a church basement or something, and you start talking, and some people get like really agitated and say, "We gotta form a union. We're gonna set up a picket line." If somebody hears that, theoretically, according to this bill, they can turn you in, right?
Well, the bill around conspiracy is specifically related to trespass, so it's basically targeted at people. an action at AT&T with Occupy Atlanta a few weeks back, and where we occupied the inside of AT&T, had 12 people got arrested, and we, to this day, are still occupying out in front of the AT&T building in downtown Atlanta, protesting them laying off members of the Communication Workers of America. Like 700 people are getting laid off, and with them making record profits. And we think that that's contributed to why they crafted certain parts of the language, because of the reaction to Occupy Atlanta's actions and the escalating number of actions taken by unions and organizations here in Atlanta that are doing direct, nonviolent direct action.
So basically what's happening is that this happened a lot up, it didn't happen a lot, but it should happen more, and it will happen more, is that in a lot of major places, in a lot of cities and even smaller cities, Occupy has joined with unions because people are finally realizing that they're in the same boat. And so that seems to be happening down there in Atlanta.
Absolutely, absolutely. We did the action at AT&T. We worked with Occupy on actions around the Verizon strike, during the Verizon strike. So we've done a number of things with them. We did a joint action the other day protesting XB 469, you know, Occupy and all the unions here. We had several hundred people show up for that.
So the bill goes to the Senate now, right?
No, it goes to the House.
Goes to the House now in Georgia, and the House is also controlled by Republicans, right?
Absolutely.
So it'll probably pass through, and then you assume that when it passes through, if it does pass through, it will be signed by the governor, who is also a Republican.
That's what's on track to happen. Obviously, that's not our intention to let that happen without a huge fight. So I like to be an optimist a little bit, and that, you know, we intend to fight this thing kicking and screaming the whole way, and organizing escalating actions up to when it hits the governor's desk.
Well, obviously,
I wanted to make one more point about the bill, though.
Sure.
This bill actually interferes with our members' right to join and maintain their membership in our union. It forces union members to reauthorize their membership every year.
The language of the bill says that if you're in a union, you have to reauthorize the employer to recognize your union membership.
That's correct.
And didn't you say there was something else, that the employers have to post something?
Yeah, the employer has to actually post a notice on their wall of how to get rid of your union. And that's in reaction to this, the NLR, the National Labor Relations Board, requiring employers to post a notice that just effective April 1st, mm-hmm. that tells you what your rights are to organize. And I guess what these people haven't read in that posting, it actually does say you have the right not to join a union. And, you know, I mean, it has other stuff in there. Mm-hmm. But they're putting up there explicitly, how do you get rid of your union? And they have to do it under, you know, this is all mandated under the State Department of Labor, which creates this huge other problem, because I'm certain with the public sector budget that these Republicans are passing, there's not money to do this stuff. I mean, so they're just going to put added pressure on the Department of Labor.
They'll find money to do something repressive, but they won't find the money to do something. I mean, for instance, if you just look at the paper today down in Texas, Perry and the state legislature down there, found more and more cuts. They cut 2/3 of the budget to aid any kind of women's health program down there. And, you know, they'll find their ways. They'll find their ways. So, I mean, so basically, what kind of appeal, beyond the Occupy groups and beyond your union, are you getting any response from the average citizen or from other union members?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, Martin Luther King III did a press conference with us with over 20 other organizations opposing the bill. You had women's organizations there. You had the old kind of civil rights organizations there. You had the peace and justice groups that were there, the Sierra Club. So it was kind of a broad spectrum of organizations that believe in fighting for social justice.
Well, any group, obviously any group. I mean, nothing has ever been achieved that I could see in the last 40 or 50 years in this country unless people assembled en masse, you know, in various places. And often that is not with a permit. It's just the people expressing their will. This bill makes it a very, very serious crime to do that. I mean, obviously, in advance, they're trying to suppress this whole thing because it's going to be a hot summer for a lot of people, you know.
Sure. Absolutely. No, it's going to be a... We're, you know, the springs, when it warms up around here, we definitely intend on, you know, really turning up the heat around here. We have a number of shareholder meetings that are going to be occurring more than likely in Atlanta, and that's going to, with the 99% spring stuff, we're planning on doing that, participating in that stuff. But
speaking of which,
it's a very dangerous bill.
Yeah, I'm sorry. This happens with cell phones sometimes. Is you sort of get a rubber band effect while people are twanging each other at the same time they're talking. We have Sarah on from Occupy Atlanta. Sarah, hi.
Hello.
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. So Eric is on the phone, and do you know Eric from the Teamsters Union?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So he's been telling us about this bill, which is more horrifying the more you hear the details of it. So basically, it's basically the legislature. We're having a lot of trouble with your signal there. Are you in one? Are you in an inside place or outside?
I'm outside. I'm gonna move inside right now.
Whatever we can do, because we're getting a lot of background noise. But basically, what we're getting is clearly this bill is meant to prevent. It's not just anti-union, which is happening in legislatures all over the country, but it's also anti-protest and it's anti-Occupy, is what it is. It's anti-anybody opposing the status quo, and they're just using this idea of trespassing, and they're expanding what trespassing is all the time, you know.
Yes, there's also a bill that's going through Congress right now, which is to defy, it's trespass to disrupt a meeting where there's a government official who's being protected by the Secret Service, which is also aimed to Occupy because of people mic-checking, you know, campaign stops and so on like that. Mm-hmm. So basically, you can't be where they are and raise a ruckus.
Right. I just read about that bill, and I've read the details of it. Basically, the bill is saying exactly that. They're saying, and people won't even know about this because they're not posting it. No one will be aware of this bill, but it doesn't. Of course, ignorance of the law is no excuse. It's blah, blah, blah. So meanwhile, this bill says that anywhere where there is a Secret Service agent, i.e. an assumption that there is some important person, that is to say more important than the rest of us, who needs protection, if you're within that area and you don't belong there and they drew a certain sort of perimeter, then they'll arrest you too. I mean, it is clearly on the road to a police state. The only response to this, it seems to me, is for people to get out on the street and to oppose these kinds of things, not just legislatively or with votes, but actually massive demonstrations. It just people have to overwhelm them with their numbers, you know.
Right. You know, get out and use your free speech while you still have it. It's also not a coincidence at all that we basically rolled up to AT&T with the Communication Workers of America to do a protest, and a week later, this legislation was in the Georgia State Legislature.
So the people who, what about, does this divide itself along party lines? I mean, I don't want to get into that, too, because to me, mostly the Republicans and the Democrats, at least at the federal level, are the same people. But I don't know how it breaks down there. I mean, do you get a lot of support from the Democratic Party in Georgia?
Maybe not the party per se. We get a lot of support from particular legislators who all happen to be Democrats.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
People like Senator Vincent Ford and Senator Nan Arick. And they, I don't know about the party structure, but it definitely, even if there were some Democrats in the Senate last night who maybe thought that, I guess, you know, they were shut out, basically. They were shut out of the debate.
Yeah, Eric was saying.
So whether or not they ally themselves with Occupy or whatever, it's clearly the Republicans against them. So
yeah, and it was a party line vote last night too.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
I mean, they the Democrats to the person voted against the bill, and Republicans to the person voted for it.
Well, let me ask you this then. Basically, you get a lot of obviously what you get from people like Newt Gingrich, speaking of Georgia, and other people like this of his ilk, is that the unions are in the pocket of the Democrats and of the president, that kind of thing. But Occupy's viewpoint has always been much wider than that, I think. And I know, Eric, I'm sure you could tell me that there's probably an affiliation or closer affiliation with, let's say, the general group of your members with the Democratic Party rather than the Republican Party for the obvious reasons. But this seems to be a wider battle to me.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't think anybody because you do, like you were talking about that other legislation on the federal level. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is. Sorry, I guess from our standpoint, we don't have any permanent friends. We only have permanent interests, you know, labor, mm-hmm. And it just so happens that in many cases here in Georgia, in particular, we can't find a pro-labor Republican. So you know, the folks that Sarah talked about, those are our, you know, some of our best friends out there. And for the most part, the Democratic Party of Georgia did put out the call to come to our protest the
mm-hmm.
other day.
Well, that's good.
So they were, you know, I think that these folks are they understand that their futures are bound up with progressive movements to some degree, mm-hmm. and so I think that it does give them some sort of reason to be on the and pushing back against this stuff with us. I mean, these folks are and our friends. I was, you know, very proud of our friends in the Senate last night who were doing everything they could to stop this bill last night. And obviously they were, because they were the minority party, they were cut off at the knees.
Now, all this stuff, there's a lot of these kinds of things happen. They happen in states all over, Ohio, Wisconsin, everything. But there's a concentration of this kind of Republican anti-union, just to put it mildly, anti-union behavior in a lot of southern states, Alabama, et cetera, et cetera. So Occupy doesn't necessarily, and I mentioned this before, focus on one party or another, or even on the idea of who to vote for, which candidates to vote for. But in a place like this, where you see something so clearly, and it affects everybody on the ground, right in your face, will Occupy, obviously, I'm assuming the Teamsters are going to get involved in the voting process on certain candidates, but will Occupy be involved in this, Sarah, in terms of like supporting certain candidates or voting?
Occupy as such, I mean, we've had these conversations, right?
Mm-hmm.
And more or less the conclusion that we've drawn is that Occupy as such is not going to endorse a candidate or a party, because we would never be able to reach consensus on that.
Mm-hmm.
And we work by consensus. But we as individuals are, you know, are perfectly willing to even, you know, support candidates and even run. And what is happening is that Occupy is giving us a lot of experience and activism and organizing. And I think that as the year progresses, some of us may turn that in different directions.
Mm-hmm. Well, obviously, what are the virtues? It's a good and a bad thing in a way, to use certain words. I mean, one of the virtues of Occupy being completely horizontal, as it is in most places, is not having the top-down structure, is that Occupy in one place or another is never going to come out and endorse a slate of candidates. On the other hand, since no one person represents Occupy or is the spokesperson for any particular Occupy place, as you say, anybody in any group can say, can make as much noise as they want about any particular candidate. No, Occupy is going to tell them not to do it. So, you know. As far as Eric, you still there? I'm going to ask you. Did we lose him? No. Okay, I guess we're having trouble with these cell phones. Cell phones are the benefit of the modern age, and also the bane if you're on radio of trying to have a consistent conversation with people, because the signal always wobbles all over the place. But so, Sarah, as far as what's happening in Atlantic, can you give us some idea of actions that are coming up down there?
Well, we're
oh, you're there. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Were you?
No, it's all right.
Who are you asking?
Both of you, go ahead.
Sarah, do you want to go first, or you want me to go?
You go ahead.
Okay. We're going to be having some conference calls. The labor movement is going to be having conference calls to plan our actions going into the legislature is not in session today and tomorrow. So the first day it's going to be back in session is Monday. So that's when the bill will start moving through the House process with the going to committee and everything. So we're going to be mapping out our strategy. Obviously, we want to be in there, basically, you know, in people's faces, putting a human face on the people that they're trying to wipe out.
Mm-hmm.
We want them to understand, and we also want them to understand that we absolutely, to put it bluntly, I guess the payback is going to be hell.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we want on the record who votes for these bills so we know who our friends are and who our enemies are. And like Sarah said, you know, Occupy Atlanta is more than likely not going to endorse a candidate, but they sure as heck can know who their enemies are.
Mm-hmm.
Hold those folks accountable. And I think that's absolutely we're also looking at running union members against the author of the bill.
Oh,
and also some of the other sponsors if we can recruit viable candidates.
Mm-hmm.
Really, even if we can't beat them, we want them to have to pay a political price for it.
Right.
And that is absolutely our intention. And I know Occupy Atlanta is having an emergency General Assembly tonight to talk about what they want to do.
All right. So this is going on now. People are gearing up all over the country as far as Occupy is concerned. And clearly you can see, as in Wisconsin, and there is pushback in New Jersey and in Ohio and other places where they're assaulting unions. The unions are pushing back pretty heavy. So it'll be interesting to see. And also at the federal level, you know, you've got this man running for re-election, which is apparently, as far as I can tell, all he really wants to do. I don't know what comes after that. But he has to pay attention now to unions and to workers, which he is doing. Every time you see a photo op, he's in some plant talking to some workers. So now it's time to keep him, you know, where he belongs, in the right place. So, all right. So, Sarah, from Occupy Atlanta, and Eric Robertson, who is the business agent and is it political director?
Yes, sir.
Political director of Teamsters Local 728 in Atlanta. If you want to check out more about it, if you're in the area down there and you want to check out more what's going on or just keep track of this kind of thing, you can always go to the website for the Teamsters Local there. And it's just, what is it? Can you give us the exact address on the website?
Our website's teamsterslocal728.org.
Okay.
You also have the state AFL-CIO website, which is georgiaunions.org.
All right.
And I believe Occupy Atlanta also has a website, occupyatlanta.org.
Yes. Occupyatlanta.org. And there's also a tag that says how you can help.
Okay.
There's a we pay account for our bail fund.
All right. Well, yeah.
That's all I'm going to say about what we're going to do.
It's going to be a little bit lower now, but if the governor ever signs this bill, it's going to be higher, so you need to build up the account. So. All right. Thanks both of you for coming on. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you. All right. We're going to take a little break here. You see what's going on, right? And this is just, George, this is one state. This is happening all over the place. These preemptive strikes by people who are just stomping all over the Constitution. I mean, forget about free speech and freedom of assembly. It is becoming a thing of the past if we let them get away with it. I keep saying this over and over again, and I don't want to be tedious, but this clearly is a pivotal time in our history. They have a militarized police. The Homeland Security Department, and I'm going to tell you more about this later on, if you stay tuned, is backing up all these places. The FBI, Homeland Security. Homeland Security is turning into a kind of Gestapo. They're not just protecting us from terrorists overseas. They have a lot of their money and people and technology aimed right at us as American citizens. They don't like protest. They don't want dissent. We have hardening of the arteries of the national body here. And it's time that we loosen things up and move things along a little bit. And that's what this year is going to represent. So we're going to take a little break. This is Occupied Territory with Mike Fader. Once again, go to our Facebook page. Get involved with us, please, because it's all connected to everything else. It's just Google Facebook and Occupied Territory. And now we will take a little musical break.
I
Okay, we're back here, and once again, this is Occupied Territory with Mike Fader every Thursday at 1 p.m. from 1 to 2 Eastern Time. And we are on podcast. We're on podcast. I don't know why I'm saying that, because if you're hearing me, forget about it. So as far as these preemptive strikes against free speech and freedom of assembly, without which we don't have a country anymore, not a country that's America or represents America or what is supposed to be America. We just don't have it. These preemptive strikes are all completely unconstitutional. But the Supreme Court, clearly you see what the Supreme Court is. There are five men on the Supreme Court who are wholly in the pocket of corporations. I can't say that they're being paid by corporations. Probably not. Although once in a while they will attend a dinner that they don't belong at, and they will never recuse themselves from a case, even though they're financially involved one way or another. So they're already corrupt. And these guys are, you know, they're wearing their black robes, and they might as well put on little pointy hats and turn their robes white and put it over their heads. This is a corporate fascist Supreme Court, and we can't expect anything from them. So when it comes up for constitutional review of these local ordinances or state laws, like the one we heard about in Georgia, good luck. For instance, in Chicago, we've been telling you about the fact that the G8 countries are going to be meeting in Chicago in May. I think it's on May 8th. On May 18th, and also that NATO, almost at the same time, is going to be meeting there. Why NATO countries will send their representatives to meet in Chicago, it is beyond me. I guess it's Chicago's attempt to be a big city and to have tourism or important people be there. It's a ridiculous thing. Anyhow, the Chicago Tribune is reporting that the White House has announced that the G8 summit scheduled to be in Chicago May 18th and 19th will now take place at Camp David. They're chickening out, which is good. It is good. This shows that they're scared of the people of the United States. That's bad. We shouldn't have a government that is scared of its own people. It's scared of its own people protesting or dissenting or merely disagreeing with it. However, it does show at least one thing, is that this is a serious threat to them, and that they are paying attention to it. So in other words, they are moving the G8 summit. It's going to take place at Camp David. They don't want to subject the bankers and the rich people and the corporations that run other countries to the rabble in this country. So they're going to move it to Camp David. Of course, you can't get anywhere near Camp David or you'll be shot on sight, because after all, you own it, you pay for it with your taxes, but you're just a serf and you need to stay away. So they're moving it. So finally, they got the message that Occupy was going to descend on this place. They've heard the calls for it, and they would have had 50 or 100,000 people. In May, the United States looks forward to hosting the G8 and NATO summits. Now, the president is allowing the here's what it says: to facilitate a free-flowing discussion with our close G8 partners, the president is inviting his fellow G8 leaders to Camp David. Isn't that nice? To facilitate. In other words, not to expose them to democracy. God forbid. They're like vampires. You know, if they see sunlight, they'll shrivel up and die. So they can't be exposed to protests or dissent. That would upset them in their $500 plate lunches. The NATO summit is still going to, at this point, remain in Chicago. Now, that makes it good because the protests could come out, and that makes it bad because we're talking about this is a military organization. The police are militarized. They're backed up by Homeland Security. So, but they're still meeting in Chicago right around that time, and you can always check Occupy Chicago for what's going on. And I'm going to have a guest on, hopefully next week, who has been connected with Occupy Chicago, has written articles on it, and is going to tell us more about this. Says here, Occupy Chicago responded quickly, tweeting an invite to their General Assembly to discuss how plans will change. Thousands of protesters were expected to converge on the city to get their message in front of the broadest possible audience, because there would be a lot of TV and radio and other coverage. Earlier today, the Morris Daily Herald in Illinois reported on the preparations and the Chicago Police Department had been undergoing. Now, this is the preparations for the police department, right, to get ready for the crowds of activists expected. Now, Chicago has a long, bad history, one of the worst in the whole country as far as a city organization is concerned. It has the worst history, one of the worst histories for meeting protesters. And obviously, we all know about 1968. Where the police lost control of themselves, but not one of them was ever arrested. Let's see. The Chicago Police Department had been undergoing training in order to prepare for the crowds of activists. This is what they were doing. At least two major demonstrations are planned for downtown. This is what they're expecting. And organizers of both want to send crowds of marchers down Michigan Avenue, et cetera, et cetera. As far as the preparation goes, the police department would not provide numbers, but police sources familiar with the planning said the department has sent so far 8,400 of its roughly 12,000 officers through some form of crowd control training. About 2,400 officers, drawn mostly from tactical and gang units, have completed the training designed to prepare them for the front lines of crowd control. The front lines. They're on the front lines. So if you're on Occupy, you're at war with the United States and the city of Chicago, and they're on the front lines. And you better watch out. These officers are likely to wear the black body armor that the police call turtle suits. So the Chicago police are turning themselves into ninja turtles, complete with armor and God knows what kind of weapons. So it is a dangerous thing. You know, I don't want to be irresponsible here. When I urge people to get out and protest, as I've mentioned before, I've gotten out and protested many, many times in my life, and not so long ago either. But I'm not going to be doing that right now, and I'm not going to be doing it in Chicago. But I am urging people to do it. I was urged to do it once. I was moved to do it once, and I did it, and I paid for it in various ways. People are going to pay for this. So you got to be ready for this, and because democracy is on the line. It all depends. It all depends what kind of country that you want. It all depends what kind of country you want. And speaking of which, Homeland Security is providing a tremendous amount of stuff for the police. They've provided tens of millions of dollars in equipment grants, and the police, for instance, in Tampa and Charlotte have bought armored vehicles. They have bought all kinds of other things which are not disclosing, flashbang grenades. They have bought all kinds of they have drones that they bought with this money from Homeland Security. Homeland Security is treating American citizens, and specifically protesting American citizens, and more specifically the Occupy movement, they're treating it as if it was a terrorist organization. When you want to express your rights as an American, you want to assemble, hopefully peaceably, in the street and protest the fact that the government is being stolen by rich people, that it's being turned into a fascist state. You want to get out and you want to protest this, you are considered nothing less than a terrorist now by the government of the United States. And this includes Mr. Smiley Hope and Change, who this is something to pay attention to. The fact that the Republicans are a bunch of clowns and lunatics, witch burners, fools and rich people, and they're going at each other and tearing each other's throats out. And everybody who's a Democrat loves this. They're all amused by it. They're enjoying it. I mean, if you watch something like MSNBC, and you see all these people like Ed Schultz and Chris Matthews and Rachel Maddow, whatever. And I like some of these people, right? And as far as I'm concerned, they're much more on the right side, and I mean right in terms of right and wrong, than and most other broadcasters, certainly almost any broadcasters on TV. You see people like Olbermann. They enjoy this. And how can you not enjoy it if you detest these people for what they represent and who they are, and who could not? Mitt Romney, Newt Gingrich, Rick Santorum, right? If you detest these people, it's enjoyable to see them batting each other over the head and falling down and making fools out of themselves. However, what it does do, and it's very sad, is all of this this clown show they're putting on here and this snake pit that they've turned into diverts attention from the fact that Obama, in his quiet, professorial way and occasionally flashing a big smile, is stealing hand over fist our rights from us. He is signing laws every few weeks that take more and more of our rights away. He is going after whistleblowers. He's got his Justice Department just the other day announcing that it's legal to kill whoever they want. Did you follow that one? Sometimes it makes you feel as if you're inarticulate with rage. The Attorney General has just announced that they have reviewed this carefully. They have reviewed this carefully, and they have decided that the due process involved, due process, it's interesting, right? D-U-E, due process involved, that the president is giving due process to American citizens abroad, Now, these people abroad who are involved in plots to attack the United States, but even people who broadcast on the radio or write articles that are inflammatory, who are American citizens, and not even American citizens, but in this case, it's more to the point that they're American citizens. Let's say somebody who's an Arab over here or a Muslim, and this has been the case 99% of the time, goes over back to Yemen or goes to Somalia or someplace like that, and they're hiding out somewhere, and they're broadcasting inflammatory remarks, you know, attack the United States, this is how you do it, this is when you should do it, you know, kill all the devils in the United States, whatever it is they say. You know, these people are as crazy or crazier, obviously, than yet, at least, the people in the United States who are going after them. The president now murders these people all by himself. In other words, he doesn't have to ask your permission as a citizen, my permission as a citizen. He doesn't have to. He uses our tax money that we work hard and they take out of our paycheck. He doesn't have to ask Congress. He doesn't have to ask anybody anymore. He's like the head of a mafia family. The president, and this is Mr. Hope and Change. This is Mr. Smiley Face, the guy we're supposed to like instead of the Republicans. So he just basically his Justice Department, you know, imagine that, who works for him, gave him the green light to go ahead and kill American citizens just because he feels like it. I'm exaggerating. Yes, people come to him, the Defense Department comes to him, the CIA, whoever, they come to him, they say, you know, Mr. Al-Alawi Al-Fad, whoever his name is broadcasting inflammatory material. He's trying to recruit people for groups and cells, and we want to kill him. And the president says, well, I've considered this very carefully. Go ahead and blow his head off. Where is law? Where is due process? These are American citizens. Yes, they want to hurt us. Yes, they are terrorists. Yes, they are conspiring against the United States of America. Yes, they are scary. They scare me. But are they not entitled to any kind of due process whatsoever? If the CIA can find these people at all and track them down, if they went after Osama bin Laden, the people who went into Osama bin Laden's compound, the SEAL team, had a helicopter there which lifted them off to get away after they did it, right, and took his body along with him, it would have been just as easy to stun him or use a taser on him the same way they use on old ladies and girls at demonstrations, you know, pepper spray him or whatever. They could render him, incapable of resisting. Just put him on the plane. They put his body on the plane. Put him on the plane and, take him to the world court somewhere. Now, if we're talking about American citizens, they can track these people down. They can grab them off the streets. It's easier to kill them, obviously. They don't have to risk their lives to do it. But if they're American citizens, they should be brought back here and they should be tried in American courts for whatever their alleged crimes are. But the president now has the legal right, according to the Justice Department, to murder anybody who wants overseas who he thinks is a threat to the United States. Is that America? Is that democracy? Listen to this. This is from WikiLeaks. The whistleblowing site WikiLeaks has revealed that Department of Homeland Security began monitoring the Occupy Wall Street movement soon after its inception last fall. You hear that? An internal Department of Homeland Security report from October, when it started, describes Occupy Wall Street as a significant challenge for law enforcement. This is you and me, right? We're a significant challenge for law enforcement. Why? Because we want our democracy back. So the Department of Homeland Security is essentially a Gestapo for rich people. The report from DHS also contains information apparently gleaned from Occupy-related Twitter feeds and progressive websites, including the Daily Kos. It was released as part of the 5 million leaked emails obtained from the servers of the private intelligence firm Stratfor. Follow that story. Google Stratfor, Stratfor. In other Occupy news, it's at least 10 people who were arrested. But here's the point. The Department of Homeland Security is providing hundreds of millions of dollars eventually during the course of the spring and the summer, and they already have provided $20, $30, $40 million to local police departments to fight the Occupy movement. You want to say that the rich people are destroying America, that they've stolen our freedoms, they've stolen our money, they've bribed Congress, they bribed the president, they control the Supreme Court, they've ruined America. and they should be in jail. You want to say that? You want to protest against corporations and their anti-union practices, their anti-people practices, the fact that they pollute everything, that they steal money from us, that they cheat us, that they lie to us? You want to protest that? You're a terrorist now. No two ways about it. The Department of Homeland Security has you on their terrorist list. Try this one out. This is a good one. This is one of my favorites here. Here's a list of words that Homeland Security tracks on Facebook and Twitter. Now, I'm reading from a website which I have my doubts about, so I'll just tell you that. I'll qualify in advance. This is Alex Jones' website, and it's called InfoWars, I think. Now, Alex Jones is somebody who sees conspiracies in his bathwater, but on the other hand, he happens to be, unfortunately, right about 7 out of 10 times. Now, this is an article by Noel Brinkerhoff and David Walashinsky from InfoWars, which is Alex Jones' website. Nevertheless, anyhow, what it says is this. If not getting enough attention in your life is a problem, there's one surefire way to get the Department of Homeland Security to notice you. Use any of its proscribed watchwords on social media sites. Listen to this. Chess document. The agency is maintaining a lengthy list of items of interest, in other words, words. These words are categorized by subject, such as those falling under domestic security. These are phrases or words. If you use this on a Facebook page or social media, Twitter, whatever it is, if you use these words, presumably, possibly even in an email, I don't really know. If you use the following phrases and words, you will be tagged. You will be flagged by the Department of Homeland Security. Later on, they can come round you up like they're going to round everybody else up. This is what you can't say. Rather, you can say it, but get ready, right? Domestic security, Southwest border violence, health concern, terrorism. If you use the word terrorism on your Facebook page or on Twitter or I don't even know about your email. Also, obviously, Al-Qaeda, any spellings, weapons, cash, meth lab, jihad. Here's other words that Department of Homeland Security is monitoring. Airport, sick, gas, cloud, mudslide, spelled two different ways, canceled, interstate, marijuana, incident, police, infection, North Korea, China, Tucson, pork, help, and social media, the phrase itself. If you want to find out more about this, and good luck if you want to find out more about it. So if you look into it, probably they'll flag you, right? I mean, if you even go, probably, I'm assuming that if you go to the Department of Homeland Security's homepage, they will flag you. I'm sure of it, right? So what are you supposed to do if you're an American? What do they want you to do? Remember what George Bush said? A little stinking weasel. Remember what he said after 3 days, whenever he crawled out of the bunker under a mountain in Colorado, because he was scared of the terrorists. When he crawled out of his bunker and he flew back to the East Coast, you know, after we were attacked, Mr. Pet Goat, he comes to the site of 9/11, like 3, 4, 5, 7 days, whatever it was, when they thought there was a clear of terrorists. And he gets up there and he tells everybody, what did he tell America? What's the first thing that George Bush told Americans after certainly the worst attack on our country in the history of our country from the outside? What did he tell Americans? Did he tell us that we have to reassess what we're doing with our lives, that we have to think more clearly and deeply about what we're doing overseas, that we have to look at our society and see what on earth is so wrong with it that somebody might want to blow it up? No. What George Bush said, and contrast this with other famous presidents like Franklin Roosevelt, we have nothing to fear but fear itself, or Lincoln, you know what I mean, of the people, by the people, for it. Contrast it with any other president at a great moment in history. George Bush said, go shopping. This is what this little retard says. After we're attacked and we're practically blown up, he says they hate us for our freedoms and we should all go shopping. So apparently this is what the corporate government of the United States wants us to do. They want us to watch TV. They want us to have lots of fun with our iPads. And they want us to get on social media. They want us to play video games and want us to buy everything they're selling and shut up. They don't want to hear any trouble. They don't want to hear anything from anybody. They want us to be quiet. They want us not to say one word about what they're doing, because now if we do, we get on a list. We could get rounded up. We could get arrested. Does this sound like America? It doesn't sound like America to me. It sounds like Nazi Germany. It sounds like Soviet Russia. So this is the last chance we're going to have. This summer, this convention, these political conventions, this election, this is really the last chance we're going to have. And I think this is a serious issue, and I think it's something that we have to pray for. So let us end with a prayer. We're going to end with a prayer today. Let us, brothers and sisters, pray. Ayn Rand is my shepherd. I shall not lose. She maketh me to lie down in gated communities. She leadeth me beside the golf course condos. She restoreth my tax loopholes. She leadeth me in the paths of selfishness for her name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of democracy, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy PACs and thy lobbyists, they comfort me. Thou preparest a $35,000 a plate dinner before me in the presence of socialists. Thou anointest my head with stock options. My offshore accounts runneth over. Surely power and profit shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Koch brothers forever. Amen.